Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for question mark.
I like this one. From Donnie, who asks on the RamosLaw.com text line 303-713-1043. Man, Mark, you've been fired up about Vaughn, DT, and Emmanuel. Have you cooled down? Are you still upset about them missing an OTA?
It's not that I'm upset. And from a football perspective, it doesn't matter. Like, from a pure just getting better at football, those guys don't need the OTAs. I just think it's when you get together as a football team, it's important to have everybody there. That's what I think. That is the culture that I grew up in. That's the culture that in 12 years helped me be a part of 3 world championship teams. That's all. I mean, I'm not mad. I'm hosting an event for Vaughn on Thursday. I'll see Vaughn. I love Vaughn. Love DT, Emmanuel. Love those guys are great. Love them. I don't agree with missing.
And let's get into the because I've referenced a couple times. I think it's worth replaying one more time, but I want to take it in a different direction from the first two times we played. This is Bill Polian on a recent podcast in which he was addressing this very issue, the idea of OTAs, the importance, and whether or not it's a big deal if guys miss it. But I want you to listen closely to it because I want to take the conversation in a different direction. Here it is.
I was part of the group that negotiated the original collective bargaining agreement. And when we talked about OTAs, they were originally designed to make sure that you could inculcate and orient the new players who were coming in by a free agency to your team. They were never intended by Gene Upshaw and the union people to be essentially collegiate spring practices without hitting. That evolved over time, as most things do in life. And so now we get the perspective that, so-and-so isn't there, so it's the end of the world, he's not a good teammate, blah, blah, blah. The bottom line is that OTAs in their original version were never intended for the veterans. They get enough football. It was intended to try and help develop the young players, and it's veered away from that over time. So having known what the original intent was, I'm not at all bothered by anybody who misses it. The word voluntary is the operative word. They're doing what they're allowed to do and within their rights, totally within their rights with respect to the CBA, whatever their motivation might be.
Okay, key line there. When they were originally created, well,
right.
That was what? I mean, you experienced OTAs, right? I mean, you're going back 20 years or so plus with the idea of these OTAs, and they've grown and grown and grown to the point where it's gone really in lockstep with the popularity of the NFL. The NFL, as I've said many times, is a 365 day a year monster that needs to be fed. And you have these spring workouts now that take on, it's almost like another training camp. The way that they're talked about, the way that they're covered, the way that they're scrutinized, who's there, who's not there. So I get it. I get the idea that when these things were first created, there was the idea of, look, it's just a way for these guys to just get out, get a little work, knock the rust off. But mainly it's for the young guys.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the way the NFL is and how seriously coaches take it and how seriously players now treat their bodies. They never take a day off. They're constantly working 12 months a year to be ready. Well, I guess I can understand how what the original idea of the OTA was has changed and morphed and evolved to the point now where people view it as something that is important and you need to be a part of it for all the reasons that you list.
That part is. I think that You know, I would ask you this. Do you think it has even more importance? Because when it was in its original form, it was a little bit of a spring practice. There was some contact. There was some, I mean, I think we got in trouble a couple times for violating the contact rule. We weren't in pads. We were in helmets and, you know, in the little foamy things, little foamy shoulder protectors. But there was physicality. There was one-on-ones that were actually real. You know, there was some of that stuff that went down. So is it even more important now that you're not really allowed to touch one another, that you're not really allowed to have that kind of contact and to do a lot of the on-field stuff that we used to do? Is it even more important now to get together? Does that become even more important? I would ask you, do you think it's even more important with the limited time? Think about this now. Back in the day, the season would get over, and you know what? You'd have surgery. You'd be right back in rehabbing. You'd be around your teammates. The facility would open, and everybody would be in there working out way before the OTAs started. Like, if the OTAs started in March, we're all back in there, or, you know, middle of March or end of March, we're all back in there training. We're seeing each other every day. Now you're not allowed to walk in. I told you, I worked out of the same gym with Jeff Heirman. I'd see him a couple times a week. Well, maybe once a week, because I don't go very often. But
he was there.
Yeah, he was there on a consistent basis. How ludicrous is it that you're a professional athlete and you can't even go over to your own facility to train until April 1st? It's asinine to me. Oh, you can't have a football conversation with your football coaches. So I would say the importance of these OTAs, even though you're not touching each other, is probably even more from a camaraderie standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, from a getting to know you standpoint, from interacting standpoint to sacrificing.
But
for
these guys have missed one day. As VJ was emphatic in saying, they've been here all along.
I get that.
They've been here in the building. They've been working out. They've been lifting weights. Hey, DT, can you come give me a spot? You know, and DT's there, and he's like urging you on. Camaraderie being built. They're right. Bonding. So this stuff has been done. You know, the fact that, you know, we talk about, you know, you're talking about how important it is that the players be there as a form of leadership. What about the idea that, hey, these are the guys that are going to be counted upon 6-7 months from now.
Right.
It's a long grind. It's a long haul. Okay, there's one Monday in June. They want to take a day off. Is it the worst thing? Is it going to tear apart the fabric of your football team? Especially when the guys that you are trying, I guess, the most to influence with your veteran leadership and work ethic, they've got so much on their plate themselves right now. I mean, they're swimming. They're trying to make their own mark. They're trying to get a foothold in this league. They're trying to learn. The rookies from last year who struggled, they're trying to put last year behind them and take what they've learned and apply it to this year. They got so much thing going on in their own head. They've got so much of their own motivation. The last thing they need right now is to show up and be like, well, I really don't feel like working today. Oh, well, there's Vaughn, so I guess I better work out. These guys have too much at stake right now to have to be pushed. And if they're at a point right now in their careers where on June 2nd, they're only going to work hard if DT, Emmanuel, and Vaughn are there, then shame on them.
Agreed. They need to be self-motivated. And I believe that's one of the decisions that this organization made in the draft. And whether they admit it or not, I think they made a conscious decision to kind of change some of the guys they were drafting. But if you're a veteran player and you see a kid that not so much not working hard, but not working smart, you know, it's a bad route. It's a bad, you know, it's a bad rush. It's a bad whatever. And you can sit there and say, hey, think about this. I mean, that's incredibly impactful. And today may be the only day that you got to do that. You know, you were off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You had those 3 days, you know, to get your stuff to attend to your personal matters or to get your stuff done. Listen, again, Mike, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. From a football perspective, it's not a big deal. But I believe in the intangible stuff. I'm a believer in making sacrifices for the guys on your football team. I'm a believer in that. And I'm a believer that that is a form of leadership. Culture is developed every single day. Every single day. You've got to know what the culture of your organization is. You know, it's amazing. We always had these goal charts, offensive and defensive goal charts, right? Everywhere I ever played, every team has them, sitting up in the meeting room. And there's a lot of things on there like, hey, average 4.2 yards per carry, right? Give up less than 2 sacks. Let's see. You know, 2 drives of 60-plus yards for a score. No turnovers. You know, and on and on it goes. All these different goal charts. 60% on third down conversions. So you've got all these goal charts. And then at the end of a game on Monday, on Sunday, the game ends. And on Monday, you sit in that meeting room. And you know what's amazing? When you get a win, how many of those offensive goals or defensive goals are checked?
Mm-hmm.
Almost every one of them. Bam, we won that one. We won that one. We won that one. We won that one. So they've set these goals for you. And then you go out and try to execute those. That's like part of your culture. That's part of, you know, how you work to efficiently achieve that stuff. So culture is the same way. You know, there's a lot of organizations out there that put out a mission statement. You know, they're all proud about it, right? So they all get together as a group of managers, you know, and they sit down over a steak dinner and a couple bottles of wine. And they, you know, our mission is to blah, 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 and da, 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 da. And they're all proud of themselves. They pat themselves on the back. And if you walk through their organization, if their culture isn't set and if they're not preaching it and living it every single day, you know what? Nobody in that organization knows what the mission statement is. They read it one time, they throw it away. That's why you have all these mantras, and that's why you have these signs that hang over the doors to remind you that we're working on this culture on a day-to-day basis, and you missed a day to continue to develop that culture. Is it the end of the world? Absolutely not. But does it matter? To me, it does.
You know what kind of blows me away just as a fan of this, as a lifelong fan of this, is the way that football, that the NFL has been able to cultivate this idea of buy-in, of sacrifice, of team building, all under a cloud of no contracts are guaranteed. Heck, all this stuff you're doing in the preseason, you're not getting paid for.
Right.
You're telling guys, I need you to buy in, I need you to sacrifice, and you go out during the course of the year and you do just that. And then when the season's over, management comes to you and says, yeah, good job. Listen, you're a year older. I'm going to have to ask you to take a pay cut.
Right.
Or, hey, we're talking about Emmanuel and DT not being there. I think it's almost perfect for this conversation that those are the two that were not there because their absence yesterday allowed who to get more work? Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton, two guys who you and I were on draft night. You and I were on when these guys got drafted. And what did we both say? Oh, Broncos just drafted their DT replacement. Oh, Broncos just drafted their Emmanuel Sanders replacement. Everybody knows it. And yet, this is still a sport that probably more so than any other professional sport demands and tries to build up the idea of that self-sacrifice for the team.
Correct. And
listen, it's amazing. I give you guys the utmost credit because even though the fact that you are deemed replaceable, even though your contract can be cut at that moment, even though you can be told to take a pay cut, even though you are deemed expendable, you guys still buy into really kind of an old school mentality.
Right. I think there was a line, and I think it's North Dallas 40, basically says this, and it's spot on. Just when I say it's a business, they say it's a game.
Right.
When I say it's a game, they say it's a business. I think the understanding from NFL players is, you know, you're one play away from never playing again. You understand that aspect of it. You also understand that they operate it as a business and you are cattle. You understand that. But the bottom line to me is there are only 1,700 people in the world that are, one, gifted enough, and two, crazy enough to play this game. It is our game. And that's the beauty of it. And I think the reason that players can do what they do is because they sacrifice not for the organization. Or they do sacrifice for the organization, but they understand the organization is them. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not, you know, the name on the check. You know, it's not the corporation. It's not, you know, it's not the front office. And it's none of that. It's the guys that go out and execute. And if your coaching staff is good, it's you want to go out and execute for the guy beside you and for the coach that you love. And that's the beauty of this game, and that's the beauty of developing a culture. And John always talked about reestablishing a culture. And one of the reasons that Case Keenum, you know, why they got Case Keenum. Would it be a big deal if Case Keenum missed this? Well, he's a starter. It's not mandatory. You brought him in to help lead this team. Hey, I got a personal thing that I'm going to attend to, even though I had Friday, Saturday, Sunday off.
Okay, but come on now. We've established that quarterbacks live in their own world in the NFL. They're paid in their own world.
Mm-hmm.
They exist in their own world.
Tom Brady missed all his.
And I think that's, if you're going to be, I think that's, do you really think when Tom Brady ultimately comes back,
mm-hmm,
for their mandatory minicamp, which I think is it going on this week or it's going on next week, whatever, do you really think that his ability to lead has been hurt by him not being there in May? You think when they're grinding through two-a-days in August that people are going to be like, yeah, I'm not going to listen to Tom because he told me to, you know, cut that out route at 12 yards and not 11. I'm not going to listen to him because he wasn't here in May.
Mm-hmm. No, probably not. But let me ask you this. If things, let's just say bizarro world, things fell apart in New England, okay? Let's say they started off the season 2-4 and things were just a wreck. Do you think people think when Tom Brady is cussing them out on the sideline, do you think it carries as much gravity? Those things don't matter until they matter. And I just think, culture is established. I think it's established every day. I think it's got to be preached. I think it's got to be worked on. I just believe in that. And if you don't, it will establish itself. And human nature is to take the road less traveled. Or the road easy traveled, not less traveled, but, you know,
After you guys won back-to-back Super Bowls, John retired.
Mm-hmm.
We know after that it went south pretty quickly. But while that was happening and you guys were moving on from the Super Bowl years, new guys were coming in, some of the holdovers, some of the guys that made up the Super Bowl teams were leaving. Did you see a drop-off in terms of commitment and workouts and guys showing up and guys bonding? I mean, Mike Shanahan was still there, still right, overseeing this. You know, the same programs were still in place.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see anything that you believe, in hindsight, contributed to what happened after you guys won the Super Bowl?
Absolutely.
What?
We signed Dale Carter and let go of Steve Atwater. Steve Atwater was incredibly respected. He's a Bronco. Should be a Hall of Famer. And he sacrificed for his team. And the perception is we brought in Dale Carter, paid him all the money, therefore we couldn't keep Steve Atwater, and Dale Carter's a turd.
But we're not talking about three guys who are turds. We're talking about, and we're not talking about three guys who are new. We're talking about three guys who've been here, who've produced, who've won, who've been captains.
I'm talking about culture. I'm talking about just culturally speaking, when you don't adhere to the tenets that you have set as an organization or as a player, it affects your team. It may be tiny. It may be, it may not even measure on any scale, but it's there. You know, sometimes you can have a pebble in your shoe, Mike, and sometimes that pebble's in an area that doesn't affect you. And you can walk around all day long, and it doesn't bother you at all. And then all of a sudden, guess what that pebble does? It rolls into a part of your foot that kills you.
No, I hate that.
Right?
Doesn't matter where you are. That shoe's got to come off now.
Right. You ever had a sore inside your nose, and it feels like you
How much do you pick your nose?
I'm just saying, if you get a sore inside
your... Do you know what you have to do to get a sore inside your nose? Do you know how much...
Digging and grinding
you got to do to get a sore inside your nose?
No. I had a nose yeast infection. I don't know how you get a nose yeast infection, but there was yeast in there, Mike.
It's science.
Oh, jeez.
It was like Wonder Bread going on. And you get the sore inside your nose or a pimple inside your nose. You ever have a pimple inside your nose? You're constantly up there touching it. Oh, my God, that thing is driving me nuts. It's like having a booger up there that you can't quite get out. One of the deep lodged ones, what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you're constantly, and then once you finally kind of get it loose and you blow it out and stuff, well, how many times do you get back in your nose? Like, is anything hanging there? Do I got a bat in the cave?
Right.
Like, you're nervous about it.
Right.
Those things can fester. And again, it's probably not a big deal at all. But I think you should be there.
Well, after that.
Nose boogers.
I'm sold.
Yeast infections in your nose.
You got me. I got nothing else after that.
Like a Bruna loaf of Wonder Bread.
All right.
Anybody need a sandwich?
Oh, jeez.
Anyone?
Oh, jeez.
Ham and cheese. Oh, it happens.
Like this one.
Dug in like an Alabama tick.
I like this one on the text line. Listening to Evans is the pebble in my shoe.
Ooh.
Child, please. So there you go. All right. Well, there is a bright side, to DT and Emmanuel, especially not being there. These young receivers getting a chance to make an impression. And who has the better chance of these rookie receivers of breaking out? And Isaiah McKenzie also getting reps at wide receiver. Can he put last year behind him? And maybe more importantly, Broncos country, are you ready to put last year behind you when it comes to Isaiah McKenzie? That's coming up next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
I love talking little league baseball.
That's right. We're talking 11. Talking about how to reach and coach 11-year-old baseball. Oh, yeah. The challenges.
Matt Schlereth, what a fan.
So worthwhile, though. You've been so passionate and outspoken about this whole idea of Vaughn, DT, and Emmanuel missing the OTA that, man, you missed a golden opportunity that I purposely gave you.
Oh, man.
To say...
It's that giant brain of yours.
How wrong I was.
And I did it on purpose.
Really?
Yeah, it was like, you know, I tossed the chum out in the water to see if Big Jaws was looking to eat. And you missed it.
Maybe I didn't miss it. Maybe I just didn't want to embarrass you.
Ooh.
What did I...
Well, let's see here.
What did I miss?
Let's see.
Okay.
So I was making the point about, you know, hey, come on. It's no big deal. You know, look at what's going on in New England, you know, with Brady right. missing OTAs and Gronk missing OTAs. Mm-hmm. And do you really think it's going to have that big of an impact there? And I was waiting. Uh-huh. Chum had been thrown, and you didn't
right.
take it?
Right.
You still don't get what... Dude, this is right in your wheelhouse. They have 15 to 20 years of culture already built.
Right.
The foundation has been poured. That thing has been just
right.
rock solid for a decade plus. The Broncos are in like year two
yeah.
and still floundering to try to form some kind of identity, some kind of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And three guys that you're counting on to be a huge part of that were AWOL yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, see...
I gave it to you.
You did.
I gave it to you.
And I didn't even recognize it, but I would like to maybe not make an excuse, but give you a reason that I didn't instantly jump on that chum that you laid out there. You mentioned Brady, and I can't be held accountable when Brady comes out. You know this. You start talking about Brady, and I get starry-eyed.
You get flustered.
I do. I just get starry-eyed, and I get to the point where I'm thinking about how great I think Brady is.
Yeah.
And then I start talking about, and in my mind, I'm like, boy, he's so handsome.
And cleft chins.
Right, and then cleft chins. And the next thing you know, I'm just lost in my admiration, love for the world's greatest quarterback. So
that, you should not be held responsible.
No,
that is what
I cannot be held accountable when you throw that at me. Like, had you just said, you know,
that's the answer.
Right.
That's the answer. That is the if you are of the belief that it is a big deal that those three weren't there yesterday, there's your answer. Look, guys, do you really need to be there? No.
Right.
Is it going to make that big of a difference? No. But for a franchise that is desperately trying to find an identity and build a culture,
yeah,
you got to be there.
The culture there has been so established, and you're 100% right. It's 18 years of culture. And guys that have come in like Cassius Marsh and bagged it, you know, he got cut at halftime essentially, complaining about his playing time. And, you know, they just get rid of him. And those guys are the ones complaining. But look what happens. Look at all the former Patriots that have come out and defended. I had fun playing with the New England Patriots. Yeah, you know, if you don't want to be accountable, held accountable, if you got thin skin, you know, if you don't want to win a championship, if you don't want to do what it takes, the sacrifice, then you don't belong here. You can't play here. But it doesn't mean we didn't have fun. We didn't enjoy each other. So, yeah, you're right, 100%, Mike. I applaud you. You have a ginormous brain.
I got a giant head.
Henceforth, the reason that head is tremendous.
Just recognize the talent. That's all I'm saying. Recognize the ability to not only wedge drive, but to almost like Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, it was a that's low-hanging fruit, though. Don't pat yourself on the back too much. I mean, when you throw Brady out there, you know I'm going to get lost.
Then if it had been somebody else, you would have been of clearer mind.
Right.
And you would have seen through it. And you would have jumped on and go, hey, look, child, please, don't give me this bit about comparing New England to Denver.
Yes. I'd have been like, dude.
Seen right through it.
Stop it. That culture's established. But you said Brady, and I was like, yeah.
I love Tom Brady.
Isaiah McKenzie got a chance to work out of the slot yesterday. And also back there fielding punts. And was talking with Stokely and Zach yesterday after practice about how he's ready to put last season's tumultuous season behind him.
Not one bit. You know, I kind of, you know, not trying to, you know, listen to the outside noise. You know, I'm going to hear it here and there, and I got social media, so I'm going to see it. But, you know, I try, you know, not to listen to it. I come out here every day, and I do my job. And, you know, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come do my job for the team and for these coaches. But, you know, other than that, I got to put it behind me. I got to keep rolling.
And what kind of Isaiah McKenzie will fans see this year?
Oh, a new and improved, you know, and no, you know, nothing less. You know, I come here to do my job. I come here to be the punt returner, and I come here to be a slot receiver, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come here and play my best football and show them that I can do my job the best way I can, and I can help this team win games.
You know, it's amazing to me how many people, for them, the jury's already, you know, in. You know, the verdict is in when it comes to Isaiah McKenzie. They've had it. They don't want to see him back there.
Mm-hmm.
There is no chance for redemption in their minds. That's cold, man. Right. I mean, I get it. I mean, in many respects, Isaiah McKenzie was the poster child for what was going on with the Broncos last year. The poor play, the dysfunction.
You suck.
The sense that Vance Joseph was in over his head in year one. All of that you can almost sum up with the Isaiah McKenzie experience. But, man, to almost have this, you know, I've washed my hands of this kid mentality. Come on, give the guy a chance to bounce back. At least he sounds like he's eager to do it.
You ever see the Adam Sandler movie Big Daddy?
Yeah.
I think there's a line in there that says, "You're not mad at me, you're mad at your father." Right. You're not mad at him. You're mad at Vance Joseph for continuing to run him out there. Like, he proved that he didn't have good enough hands to be out there as your punt returner, and Vance kept running him out there. Like, understand that a year of maturity and, you know, and learn from your mistakes, it may be exactly what this kid needs to have that great redemption story. But, like, five fumbles are not his fault. The first fumble is.
Yeah.
And the second fumble, okay. But you should never got the opportunity to have another three fumbles.
Sure.
You know, it just, that's a Vance Joseph issue, and that's part of his learning curve that he'll be better at this year. And you hope that, you know, that Isaiah McKenzie figures it out as well and gets to compete for that slot position and gets to compete for that punt return position. And, you know, you'll be really forgiving if all of a sudden they punt one to him in week one and he takes it 86 yards for a touchdown. Then you'll be like, yes. So that, I mean, it's all part of it. But he deserves, you know, I mean, the kid is working hard apparently, and I don't have a problem giving him another opportunity, but put the ball on the ground.
Right.
And then, you know, you'll never play again.
And you know
those
what?
Those balls can be really slippery.
I won't even be upset with him if he puts the ball on the field that first time. I mean, I know everyone will be like, oh, here we go again. I won't be upset. But I will be upset if he gets another opportunity to do it.
Right, you know,
That's the thing.
Yes.
I mean, we could talk, you know, all this talk about culture and who needs to be there and setting the right tone. How about just something as simple as do your job or you don't play.
Do your job and quit making up.
I swear I didn't mean that to go there. I know he's a bit of a sensitive subject for a lot of people, but it.
Right.
I want him to get another shot.
Right.
But understand, it's one shot.
Yeah, I'm with you one time.
And it's got to be like that for everybody on this team. And you know, when you're 5-11, right, when you're 10-18 in your last 28. You know, the idea that you're going to get repeated chance after repeated chance.
Right.
Unless you're telling me that this is just a rebuilding project, and then fine. You know, you send these guys out with the idea of make as many mistakes as you want. It's all in the quest to improve. But if you're in it to win it, and as the Broncos tell us, they're here to be competitive, well, then you can't be allowed that
many chances. I am with you, win or tie, put the ball on the ground, and you never play again.
Well, pretty simple. See you later.
Pretty simple philosophy. I agree with it.
But I'm rooting for him.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I think he took too much abuse last year. I think people's frustration with Vance Joseph, he was the easiest outlet. Well,
I'm mad at Vance, but look.
Right.
Look at McKenzie.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. I'm going to tell you why and how the Washington Capitals' success is connected to Mark Schlereth.
Mm-hmm.
There is a tie-in, believe it or not. 6 degrees of stink next.
Music to my ears.
Congratulations to the Washington Capitals for moving one step closer to winning Lord Stanley Cup. And up 3-1, they're in the enviable position of teams that have won 31 straight series when they've gone up 3-1 in the Stanley Cup Finals. Although, the Caps are only 7-5 in series in which they have gone up 3-1. So you can understand why Capital fans are very anxious. And listen, it's been a long spell.
Mm-hmm.
Long drought of championships in our nation's capital. In fact, do you realize if the Washington Capitals win the Stanley Cup Finals, they will become the first team from D.C. to win a world championship since the Mark Schlereth-led Washington Redskins in 1991.
It's beautiful.
How do you feel about that? I mean, on one hand, you know, it's cool, but on the other hand, wouldn't you like your team to continue to stand up there on the perch?
No. I mean, you know, that'll never be taken away. Most dominant team in Super Bowl history. 91 Redskins, as voted on by the USA Today. I don't know what the criteria was. Don't really care. It was a great football team, man. Great football team, a great season. Just so much fun. But, yeah, the Caps, I love it. I love kind of, you know, the redemption story. Now, 31 straight times, the team that's gone up 3-1 in the Stanley Cup Finals has won. What'd you say the Caps record was in?
7-5.
7-5, but never in the Stanley Cup Finals.
No.
Always in the playoffs.
Right.
But they have had this... they have so many times been gone into the playoffs, been the best record, you know, had the best season and have fallen short. And I kind of look at Ovechkin, who's been a great player for a very long time, as a John Elway, had a lot of playoff success and got his team to the playoffs a lot, but didn't get the chance to win that championship early because the team around him just wasn't quite good enough. And this will be like kind of Elway winning Super Bowl 32, Ovechkin winning the Stanley Cup Finals. I think it's a cool story for me. So I know the Vegas Knights was a really cool thing too, and it was great in their first year of existence, but I am rooting for the Capitals.
Yeah, and Ovechkin, you want to see clearly guys that are all-time greats get this,
right?
Because they need it. I mean, you can say it's unfair, but it is what it is. Let's be all grown-ups here. Is that if you really want to go down as one of the greats of all time in your sport, you got to win a title. You got to have the ring. Now, is that unfair to some very deserving athletes that were clearly great, but it wasn't really their fault that their teams didn't win? Of course. You know, hello Charles Barkley, hello Dan Marino, hello Barry Sanders, but hey,
Ted Williams.
But in most sports, and I'll just ask everybody out there, when you have had that discussion of, hey, who's the GOAT? Who's the greatest of all time? Who are the greatest of all time in a particular sport? Do you happen to notice that the people that get mentioned, what do they all have in common?
Championships.
They all won championships.
You know what's interesting? I still get, Joe Montana's the greatest quarterback of all time because he was 4-0 in Super Bowls. Terry Bradshaw was 4-0 in Super Bowls, but Joe Montana, 4-0 in Super Bowls. Like somehow 4-0 in Super Bowls is better than Brady being 5-8 or 5-3. Well, he's got 3 losses. Yeah, but you got there 3 more times. You know what I mean? You got there, 4 more times? But I get the perspective. When you have those championships, you're unblemished. You have MVPs. Man, it's part of what It's part of what it doesn't, you know, not winning a championship obviously does not exclude you from being one of the great all-time players.
Right.
But there is that yeah, but caveat at the end of your name that if you don't have a championship, they'll always look at it as the guy just never got a championship. Especially when you play a prominent position like quarterback, you know, like what Ovechkin is a forward that has just been an all-star in the NHL for, you know, a decade.
Well, we're bouncing around a little bit. If you can find it, I found it mesmerizing. It's a video that's making the rounds on social media of after the J.R. Smith gaffe at the end of game one, the camera follows him to the Cleveland bench. And then the camera is just fixed on the Cleveland bench for the next 2.5 minutes. And all you hear is the ambient crowd noise going on in the background.
Right.
That's it. My goodness. Not one word was said. LeBron sat there, I don't know, mad, pouting, sulking, moping, whatever you want. JR just staring blankly into nothing.
Good brain.
Nobody saying anything. Kyle Korver with a couple of, you know,
it's
obligatory
right.
attaboys, you know, that kind of thing. Right. And it was, man, if you needed any confirmation that everybody in that huddle understood that J.R. Smith, including J.R. Smith, screwed up big time, watch that video. And if you also need any evidence as to why the Cavs got their doors blown off in the overtime, look at that video. And if you need any more evidence as to why they blew whatever chance they had of winning this series on that play, look at that video.
You blew it!
If you need confirmation of why the Warriors will win this series, look at that video.
It's
great. The best player in the world has no belief in his team and is like exasperated, like he just knows we cannot win. Like that video was just a statement on we've talked leadership all day long. You want to talk about just poor body language leadership from LeBron James? He basically threw in the towel. Didn't he? Didn't that video just like...
He was flat out just chomping on contempt.
Yes.
Just vitriol. Oh. Again, it's a great video.
Can't you just at some
point... Body language 101.
Right. Can't you at some point have some, you know, false chatter? Some false enthusiasm? Some false bravado? I don't know. That's me.
Kyle Freeland, we turn our lonely eyes to you tonight. Rockies mercifully on the road.
Hey, Kyle.
In Cincinnati.
Kyle, stay low. Keep your knees bent.
And finally.
Throw strikes.
Finally, this last one on our RamosLaw.com text line. Guys, DC United has won MLS Cups.
Who cares?
Exactly.
We're talking about real sports. Yeah. Okay. On that note, Pritch and Cecil coming your way next. Oh, angry soccer fan.